Hi, I'm Gillian Russell, and this is the Personal Best Podcast, a download from the BBC. For more information, just head to our website, bbc.co.uk/Radio Scotland.
BBC Radio Scotland.
He's a former international road cyclist who competed in the Commonwealth Games. He's a passionate runner, you know, the kind who do these crazy ultramarathons. He's also someone who lives by the mantra of a life without limits. Why? Well, like so many Scots, he's diabetic. And when you consider that in Scotland there are more than 2.5 times the number of people with diabetes than with cancer, you can see why he's on a bit of a mission. He wants to show that everyone like him can have a life without limits. I'm Gillian Russell, and I'm delighted that Roddy Riddle is joining me for a special edition of Personal Best. Now, you're big into your fitness. You always have been. I mean, has this been since a child that you've done, you know, been very active, done lots of sport and exercise?
Yeah, well, I used to play football when I was in school and things, but they kept breaking my ankle. So took up cycling when I was 13 and ended up having quite a successful cycling career.
A very successful cycling career.
Yeah, well, I raced for Great Britain on a few occasions and raced for Scotland on many occasions. So, yeah, when I retired from cycling in 96, I started doing running and did the Highland Cross in 97. And since then, I've done a few marathons and things.
All that active life changed a few years ago. Tell me what happened.
7 years ago, almost to the day, had a severe weight loss. I lost almost 3 stone in the space of 6 weeks.
3 stone in 6 weeks?
Yeah. I had an unquenchable thirst, and I was just constantly going to the toilet.
Did alarm bells start ringing, or was it a case of, oh, do you know what, I'm so busy, too much going on in life, I'll just put it to one side?
I put it to one side. My wife certainly didn't. She was quite anxious. She was heavily pregnant with her youngest child, Finlay. So she did a bit of research online and got a home self-testing kit for diabetes, and that arrived on the Monday. I did the test and it came back alarm bells. Yeah, it looks positive that you've got diabetes. So, but I decided to wing it because I had a ticket for the UEFA Cup final, which was on midweek, and I knew if I went to the doctor, there's no way he would allow me to go to the UEFA Cup final. So I made an appointment for the doctor the day after the Cup final. And
you put your desire to go to the Cup final before your health and before your wife's worries?
I did, and I wish I didn't, because I didn't enjoy it, not just because my team didn't win, but I was just so tired and lethargic and everything with the symptoms of leading up to being diagnosed.
Were you in the danger zone at all?
Very much so.
Really?
When I went to the doctor, he immediately put me up to Rigmore.
That's the hospital here in Inverness,
yeah. That's it, yeah. So I actually cycled to my doctor, then got back on my bike. I then cycled to Rigmore Hospital, and they did loads of tests that day. And a person without diabetes, blood glucose level is between 4 and 7. The diabetic specialist doctor came in later on that day, and he said, "How did I get there?" And I goes, "I cycled." He goes, "You're lucky that you're still alive, never mind being able to cycle in. It was my fitness that kept me alive." He says,
"Really?
The blood glucose level you've got today is a very special one. It was 45.6.
And a normal person is between 4 and 7. It's actually amazing that you were still alive and still functioning.
Yeah, so it was pretty crazy to go to the football match, because really I was putting my life in danger.
So if you hadn't got to the doctor and then the hospital that day, what might have happened, given that your readings were so high?
I would have gone into diabetic coma, which you probably wouldn't have come out of.
That is hugely frightening. Did it suddenly dawn on you when you were in the hospital and you saw the reading and you were told this by the medics? Did the severity of it suddenly hit home?
Not really, no, to be
really?
Honest, no. Because I had that 4 days from doing the home testing kit to being officially diagnosed, it gave me that time to go online and do a bit of research, and I knew it was something that was controllable if you were willing to take control of it.
So you reached the acceptance stage straight away, which sounds very positive. What about the impact on your life as a person, as someone that likes to exercise, family life, work life, and so on?
I've not let it change my life at all. I rule my diabetes, and I'll never ever let it rule me. When I was first diagnosed, I wasn't allowed to do any sport. It was 7 years ago, doing sport with type 1 was not really the recommended thing. And because I'd come from such a sporting background, I wasn't really willing to accept that. So I got a treadmill and put it in my garage. So I learnt about my diabetes in a safe environment. Rather than being out in the hills, I could go on the treadmill, learn what happened to my blood glucose levels. If I did have an issue, I could just go into the house and take Lucozade or whatever. And that's how I learnt about my diabetes.
Now, there are two different types of diabetes, type 1 diabetes and type 2. What's the difference between them?
Type 1, your body produces no insulin whatsoever. So you're getting your insulin from either injecting 4 times a day or from an insulin pump, which I am now on.
And type 2 diabetes?
Type 2 diabetes is generally brought on through lifestyle and healthy eating quite often, just general lifestyle. And it's controlled generally through tablets and diet, whereas if you're type 1, you produce no insulin whatsoever,
so you need
to have either the multi-daily injections or the insulin pump.
So you were told, and 7 years ago, and I appreciate things have changed and the attitude to exercise has changed, but you were told exercise was a no-no. Did you, I mean, immediately just think, I'm not accepting that, I'm going to challenge that?
It wasn't completely taboo. It was taboo for what I wanted to do. I wasn't happy just going out and doing a 10K run. I wanted to do something a lot bigger. When I was first diagnosed with the self-testing kit, I knew absolutely hee-haw about diabetes. And that sort of embarrassed me quite a lot. Because me being a person of the world, racing all over the world and things, I thought if I knew nothing about it, the chances are the majority of other people in the street. So that's why I do a lot of these big events to raise awareness for type 1 diabetes. That's why I decided to run the Marathon de Sable to raise awareness, and also I raised some money, £26,000, for 2 diabetes charities leading up to it as well.
We'll come on and talk a bit more about that major marathon in just a sec. But you said about getting a treadmill for your garage so that you could run in a fairly safe environment. How did that work? How did you build up your fitness and your confidence?
Write everything in a diary. So going on to the treadmill, write what my blood glucose level was, write if I took any carbohydrate on board, write how I felt, do a test halfway through, then do another test when I finished. And I just learnt by doing slightly longer all the time. And that gave me the confidence to eventually go out into the hills and do longer runs in the hills.
You were clearly very meticulous about it, which must make a huge difference. But did that teach you to listen to your body a lot more than perhaps most of us typically do?
Yeah, and up until this day, I still log absolutely everything. And although I can look at it, like say I know I'm going for a 2.5 hour run, I can look at what my blood glucose level was prior to another 2.5 hour run of similar, and the blood glucose levels can be exactly the same. But finishing blood glucose levels can be totally different. So every day is totally different with diabetes. You can't go down to Halfords and buy a Hayes manual on diabetes, because every day is completely different. And you just have to accept that.
And every person is different too.
Yes. But as I say, I just treat every day as it comes and just get on with it.
So when you got your treadmill and you built up your confidence, built up your fitness, and then started to go out running in the hills, how were you feeling in yourself? You obviously were listening to your body, you were able to control your diabetes, so were you getting a sense of fitness back, a sense of confidence and independence back, because here was this condition you were diagnosed with, but actually here I am and I can actually continue running like I was before?
The confidence thing was definitely something that really improved, and I can go out now, everywhere I go, I've always got half a packet of glucose tablets wrapped in cling film, just in case I have an issue. Even like today, when we're sat here, I could dip and I would need to have glucose on board. And I always try to cover for all eventualities when I'm out in my runs and things.
You mentioned the Marathon de Sable. For anyone that doesn't know what it is, tell me what this monster run is all about.
It's classed as the toughest foot race in the world. It's a 5-day, 155-mile run through the desert in Morocco.
Oh, that sounds horrific, to be honest.
Yeah. When I was diagnosed and I got the confidence from doing my running and the things, I then wanted to do something to raise awareness for diabetes.
And that was your goal? That's why you did it? Or are you a bit of a crazy guy that likes to set himself these challenges anyway?
I didn't actually choose the marathon, Salpa. My physio, David Brandy, I put it on social media that I was looking for a major challenge, and he came back and said, Marathon Salpa. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I've heard of that. So I've had a friend that's done it in the past, and he said he would only recommend it to folk that he hated. So I thought, well, he's quite a tough guy. If he's saying that, it's got to be tough. So there's normally like a 3-year waiting list, but I phoned the organisers and told them about my past, being an ex-international cyclist, recently diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. And he said to me, he says, okay, leave it with me, give me your email address and I'll get back to you within the next week. That afternoon I got an email, we can get you in next year.
Really?
So I'm like, you dancer. So I went back to David Brandy, my physio, and said, got in and I'm in next year. Which he came back to me, you idiot, I was only joking.
No way, really?
Yeah, oh. But by that point I was in and I was delighted.
Now you've said the distance, the location, I mean, it sounds horrific in terms of the, you know, how many miles you're running, the conditions you're running and so on. How on earth do you prepare for that? I mean, you live in Inverness, it's quite different conditions.
Yeah.
How do you get ready for that kind of a run?
I was quite lucky, access into Napier University's climatic chamber. You can acclimatise for the heat, you can't acclimatise for the cold. So if you can get into a climatic chamber quite a few times within 2 weeks leading up to your event or going to the heat, it helps you acclimatise. So I was going down to Edinburgh, I went down 4 times within 2 weeks of departing, and they went on the treadmill in their climatic chamber to test all my kit as well. I wanted to test the sun creams to make sure it wouldn't react. I wanted to just test everything, my kit.
And presumably your insulin and all of that you're having to test under these conditions.
Test the insulin pump, make sure that it's going to cope with the conditions, because certainly manual that the insulin pump comes with says that it won't. So
wanted to challenge that, didn't you?
Yeah, and the Animas who make my insulin pump, they didn't know what would happen to the pump during the event as well. So it was really cover all eventualities, because we weren't sure what would happen to the pump. I carried my old insulin pen, so if the pump did pack in, or if the insulin crystallised in the pump, which it actually did in the last day, then I could just get my insulin pens out of my backpack, which were in a Frio bag, which keeps them at the correct temperatures. Could just go back to my pens, which I did actually have to do on the last day.
Belt and braces, just as well.
Yeah, I do try to cover all eventualities when I do events to make sure that if there is an issue, it doesn't become an issue.
The actual event itself, what the heck was that like?
It was pretty brutal.
To put it mildly.
Yeah, but I was there to do a job. I was there to...
Did you see it like that?
Yeah, yeah. As soon as I finished the finish line, I just wanted to be home because my job was done. I was allocated one email a day, and I sent my one email to...
Is that the same for everybody?
Yeah.
Right.
I put my one email to my brother, Kenny, who was putting it on my social media. So because I'd raised money for JDRF, Juvenile Diabetes Charity, and Diabetes UK, they were reposting it on Facebook, retweeting it. So it was going around, getting put all around the world. One particular one from a parent of a 12-year-old who had type 1 diabetes, saying that what I was doing was allowing them to give their child the confidence to have a sleepover. So when things were really tough during the day, I just had to think back to the emails, knowing that what I was doing was changing people's attitudes, and it just put blinkers on and made it so much easier for me. The emails meant so much to me that I've actually kept them.
I bet.
So although you're self-sufficient for the whole race, so although my bag was getting lighter because I was eating my food, it was just getting as heavy because I was keeping all these emails that I was getting. As I say, I still pick them up every now and then, and they meant a lot to me and really, really gave me the strength to get through when times were really tough.
Well, let's talk about those tough times, because it's a huge distance you're covering over 5 days in incredible heat. You've got your diabetes to deal with and monitoring your glucose and insulin and so on. How tough did it get?
One particular day, the second day, I had vertigo before I went.
Oh,
and the
another thing to deal with.
Yeah, the second stage, we were up over 3 massive mountains with the severe drop-offs. If the finish line wasn't at the other side, I would have just turned back and gone home.
Really?
But because I was doing doing it for the charities and to raise awareness, I just battered on and I've cured my vertigo, to be honest. And then on the longest stage, which was 48 mile, it was 52 degrees for 3 hours during the day, which we were going over massive sand dunes at this point, which were like being on an escalator going backwards.
I'm surprised you didn't just pass out. I mean, I couldn't even cope with that kind of heat just being stationary, let alone running.
It was a few more days into it, so we were a bit more acclimatised. But, it's not like going to the cold where you just put on more clothes. You can only take off so much clothes in the marathon, Sabla, so...
And keep it decent.
Yeah, keep it decent. You just batter on.
You said before you are attuned at listening to your body, clearly. But then you were in these... That's fine in normal circumstances here in Scotland, but you were in extreme conditions there. So did it make it harder for you? I don't mean, oh, woe is me, I'm doing this and I've got diabetes, but, you know, did it make the run particularly tough because you've got all that extra stuff to monitor?
Not really, no. I just had to do a lot more things that the other athletes didn't have to do. I had to do blood glucose tests before starting, calibrate my pump, with a thing called a CGM, which is a continuous glucose monitor, which was attached to the other side of my stomach. So I've got a cannula for my insulin pump on one side, and I've got the CGM sensor on the other side, and via Bluetooth, it talks to my pump and gives trend arrows of what your blood glucose levels are doing. So rather than me having to stop every few K and do a blood glucose test with my blood glucose monitor, I could just look at my insulin pump.
As you're running?
As I'm running, press a button, and it gave you what your blood glucose level is and what your trend arrows are doing. So if the trend arrows were dipping, I could just get food on board. If the trend arrows were going up, I could just take a small amount of insulin. If the trend arrows going straight, then it means that you're doing everything correct. And when I came back, I downloaded all my CGM readings for the marathon Sabla, and during every stage, because I controlled it so well, I was within a normal person's range through nearly every single stage.
That's incredible. And is it the exercise itself that helps regulate it?
Exercise is the best form of medication available, not just for diabetes, for anything, in my opinion.
So in your case, you know, you've proved that because the amount of exercise you do, whether it's the extreme events or just your daily and weekly exercise, has helped your diabetes, has helped you control it. You know, not everyone with diabetes does exercise. Maybe they're not even that active at all. How important is it for people with diabetes to be active? Do you think it makes that much of a difference that you would advise people to take up some kind of exercise to help control it?
Yeah, I think it's the best form of medication available. It helps you control your blood glucose levels, your weight, your blood pressure, all these sort of things. So it doesn't have to, your personal best doesn't have to be what I'm doing. You don't have to go to the Sahara and run 155 miles. You can go for a walk. You can go do what you used to do when you were a kid. Go to the park and play football again with your friends. Any type of exercise is better than no exercise, definitely.
You describe it as a job, a two-pronged job, if you like, to raise awareness and raise money, but also to set yourself that challenge, that goal. You're that kind of guy. So how long is it from when you complete a challenge like that till you're thinking, what's my next challenge?
Not very long, to be honest, because I felt I had this snowball, literally a snowball effect going, because all these emails, I thought, I can't just stop now, I've got to do something else. So it was like, okay, I've done the heat. The obvious has got to be, you've got to go to the cold and
is it? Is that really the obvious?
Well, it was the obvious to me. I found one, which I've entered, and it's in Canada, in Alaska, and it's 350 miles over 8 days. In temperatures.
You are not serious.
350 miles over, you've got 8 days to do it. It's not like the Marathon Sabla, where it's set stages. If you want to stop, you just stop, and you stop at the side of the road. It's actually on the same roads as Ice Road Truckers are on.
Oh, so, really? Oh, well, for anyone that's seen that on TV, they will know how extreme that is.
Yeah, and you're self-sufficient for the whole time, bar you. There's designated checkpoints, and they're anything from 30 miles to 70 miles apart, where you'll get given allocated hot water so that you can make your food up. So it could be, there could be days where you don't see anyone for 70 miles.
Yes, it could be very lonely if you're out of sync with what other runners are doing.
Yeah, totally. And you're self-sufficient, so you're towing a pulk as well. A pulk's a sledge with wheels, so everything that you need for that period that you're away.
So let me get this straight. You're running 350 miles over 8 days, self-sufficient, so you're dragging a sledgey thing behind you. You're camping. It's extreme ice, snow conditions. Are you mad?
Well, you say that it's 8 days. I would actually like to think I would do it in less than 8 days.
Oh, for goodness sake. Really?
Because I don't like the cold and I don't like camping.
So you're in a hurry?
Yeah, I'm in a hurry. Because I don't like camping, I'll be a lot of sleep deprivation. So providing I'm still moving forward, I'll just keep moving.
You'll keep ploughing on?
Yeah.
Do you think the extreme cold with your diabetes is going to be tougher than the extreme heat that you did in the Marathon des Sables?
It's going to be totally different. It's going to be about making sure the insulin pump doesn't freeze. We don't know what's going to happen to it in extreme temperatures. Same with my blood glucose meter. I can be out running here with my blood glucose meter and just -5 and it'll come up error, refer to owner's manual. Obviously I don't have the owner's manual with me when I'm out running in the hills, but
does that not frighten you? I mean, what kind of temperatures are you talking out there?
They think it can be anything between -30 to -50.
It's actually really hard to get your head around, even just being in those temperatures, let alone competing, let alone dealing with an insulin pump that may or may not work.
I'll try and cover myself. In fact, I'll make sure I cover myself for all the eventualities. I'll have my insulin pens. I'll have backup batteries for I'll have to take a lot of batteries because obviously with the cold temperatures you go through a lot more batteries in your blood glucose meter and things. So yeah, I'll be carrying quite a lot more kit than the other athletes that are doing it.
And that makes it tougher too. You do feel you're doing a job and trying to raise awareness. How much of it is about you trying to prove to yourself that you can live a life without limits, to use your phrase, that you can... Well, diabetes is not going to get in the way of your life and especially your exercise.
One of the reasons I do these things is if it gives confidence to other people to show that it shouldn't stop you achieving your goals in life, then that's why I do it.
A lot of us won't have that same drive and determination that you have. You do have it by the bucket load. Where does that come from?
I think it's probably come from when I was younger doing the cycling, because cycling was so tough. It is a really, really tough sport, and you have to be really mentally strong to be able to do it day in, day out. I mean, we did stage races which were 9 days long, 100 miles every day, and the average speed at the end of the whole race would be like 27 miles an hour. So to do that sort of thing, you have to be mentally strong.
And that's clearly stayed with you all your life.
Yeah, and even down to like when I broke Graham O'Brien's Scottish 1 hour record, it's classed as one of the toughest things that you can do. I probably didn't have the physical ability to beat it, but I had the mental strength to beat it.
Well, that's interesting, because so often we hear about the mental strength being as important, if not more important.
I would say it's more important, definitely more important. Obviously, you've got to have the engine, but the mental strength puts the turbo on that engine, I feel.
Does that come from your childhood, your family?
It's just something gained through my cycling career, which you had to, because if you didn't, then you were just another number in the peloton. If you wanted to win races, you had to be that bit more mentally strong than the person that was up the road in the break with you, because if he was stronger than you mentally, there was only one person going to win, cross that finish line first. So you have to be more mentally strong than your fellow competitors.
Never giving up,
just keep thriving.
Have you ever failed? I mean, have you had to deal with that?
When I did London Marathon, I went through 10 mile in under an hour, so I was doing 6 minute mile pace. I went through half marathon in 1:18. I spent the next 6 mile looking for potholes to go over my ankle, so I guess I was failing there mentally. But then I got to 20 mile and I thought, God, there's only 6 mile to go, so then charged on and got to the finish. So yeah, there is times where you have mental lapses and you have to question your mental strength, and that was one particular one that I remember. I remember physically looking for potholes in the road to go over my ankle.
So your logic being, if you got injured, you would have to pull out. there was a reason for pulling out and you hadn't failed. Was that the way your mind was thinking?
That's exactly the way my mind was thinking. I couldn't just pull out.
That's because just, failure that, doesn't feature in your vocabulary.
That's taking the weak way. I was willing to go over my ankle to get out.
Are these extreme challenges, you've done one, you're about to do another, do they to a certain extent define who you are? Do you want them to define who you are and kind of give you a label, if you like, a status, if you like?
No, it's not that. It's just when I finished the marathon in Sabah, I did literally feel a snowball effect of the awareness thing, and that's the reason that I chose to do the opposite and go and do a cold one. Because if I've done the hot one and I've done the cold one and succeeded in both, it proves that having tight one shouldn't stop you achieving your goals, because this is going to be the biggest challenge I've ever had to take on in my life, but by far the biggest challenge. I don't like the cold, I don't like camping, and it's a long way.
Am I right in thinking you'll be the first diabetic, assuming you complete this one, to have done the two extremes?
Yes, the two extremes. Up until this year, the 6633, I've only ever had 11 finishers. But this year, they had a 20% success rate. There was 30 runners in it, and they had 6 finishers this year. So that just proves how severely tough it is.
Oh, it's incredibly tough. But does that not... See, for a lot of us, that low success rate would put us off. But does that have the opposite effect on you? Does that make you more determined to be one of the successful ones?
Yeah, I think it does, yeah. And that's one of the reasons that I've chosen this one, because it is extremely tough. And the fact that the amount of finishers that they've had prove how tough it is. To lose 80% this year, and that was their most successful year ever, then it shows that it is an absolutely brutal event.
Why do you have that sense of responsibility? Because clearly you have it in spades, that you want to get the message across.
When I finish this one, I will happily retire because I've done the two extremities.
I'm going to hold you to that, because I will bet once you've done this one, you'll be itching to find something else.
I don't think I will. I honestly don't.
If, for some reason, you don't complete this in March, would you attempt it again? Do you feel you need to tick it off?
I ain't even going down that road.
No.
It's not even going to open that door, because I'm going to be on that start grid to finish it and then retire happy.
We're going to hold you to that.
Okay.
We want to wish you all the very best for this challenge. It's a huge mountain to climb. I'm sure you're going to do it. Roddy, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you very much, and thanks for helping raise awareness of type 1 diabetes.
If you want to find out more about Roddy's challenge, you can go to bbc.co.uk/Radio Scotland and head for the Personal Best programme page, where you can also download a podcast of this show. Your story's been hugely inspiring, Roddy. Thank you for your time. I'm Gillian Russell. You've been listening to Personal Best. Bye for now.